Hi everyone, welcome to Steps audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from Steps events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Anagami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
Fahad, this is one thing I've been dying to say to you since you've come here. By the way, if you don't know who he is, you've been sleeping for the past year or 2 years, especially on social media. So Fahad, you're on stage today.
Yeah.
Should that be concerning?
Extremely concerning.
Fantastic. Now I hand it over to you guys. Please take it through.
Thank you very much. So hello and welcome to this session on metrics that matter. I'm Julia and I run a podcast production company called Pineapple. And we're really pleased together today to be bringing together this amazing panel of experts. So we're going to talk about some of the strategies that they use in their businesses and businesses they work with, looking at organic reach and the tools and metrics that are providing them with lots of lovely insights. So we've got Fahad, as you know, in the middle there, who is at K9 Unit. We've got Matt here, who is the founder of OS. And Ankitar, who is working at Touchstorm and Video Amigo in marketing. So I've given you a very top-line intro, but I'd love if you could introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about how organic metrics kind of work with your businesses and the businesses that you work with. So do you want to start down there, Ankitar?
Hello. Yeah. Sorry about the mic check. Thanks, Juliet. Hi, everyone. My name is Ankitar. Like she said, I work in marketing at Touchstorm and Video Amigo. We are a YouTube-first services agency who's data-backed. And I know that everybody says we are data-backed, but we have the numbers to prove that. We have built a platform called Video Amigo, which basically looks at 2.5 billion videos and 27 million YouTube channels on a daily basis, getting that data, appending it with more information, and getting insights that brands really need to grow on YouTube. And the reason we're doing this is because we facilitate organic growth with that. In fact, one of our mottos is organic growth engineered. You know, organic growth just doesn't happen. You have to engineer it. Both of the gentlemen here on the stage nodding and agreeing with me. So, yeah, that's what we do. And it's very important for us, our clients' organic metrics. We'll talk a little bit about that.
Thank you. And Fahad, do you want to tell us a little about you?
I dropped out of college 5 years ago, started this company with my partner, Mohammed Majdi, K9 Unit. We make TikToks for a living. Some of our key clients are like Tufik Raidi, co-founder of Brands for Less, helped them reach 1.1 million followers. Sephora, and my own page has 2.8 million followers. And yeah, we just TikTok, organic reach, not a single dirham spent on ads. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Perfect. Yeah. And Matt?
Hey everyone, I'm Matt. I moved to Dubai 2 months ago from Toronto, Canada. Over the last 14 years, started a couple profitable companies, sold a couple profitable companies. I'm the founder of Founder OS. My mission is to help 100 million founders accomplish their dreams through proven systems. We've built the Founder OS audience to over 3.5 million people organically over the last year and a half. And yeah, in terms of looking at metrics, for me at least, it's, you know, there's different metrics per platform. And for us internally, I think, you know, making amazing organic content and building amazing organic content funnels is kind of one part art, one part science. And so I think a lot of the focus here is on the science aspect. So for there, it's, you know, on X, looking at things like how many people are saving your content, LinkedIn, how many saves are you generating? On platforms like Instagram, it's oftentimes bookmarks and shares. And on YouTube, it's quality watch time. And so I think the metrics that matter depend on the platform that you're working on. Inevitably, I think that some of the commonalities are sort of asking yourself, why would someone save this piece of content? And why would someone look at this piece of content and share it with five friends? And if you can kind of answer those really clearly, you're engineering some content out the gate that has a good shot at, you know, pushing some numbers. But yeah, I'm sure we'll get into a lot of this on this conversation.
Yeah, I'd actually love for us to start there. So getting a little bit into which metrics, which KPIs you're each individually kind of prioritizing, which ones for you work best, and for the audiences that you're trying to reach as well. So I don't know if you want to continue, Max. That was kind of a great starting point.
Yeah, so yeah, I think we've got some like awesome specialists here, YouTube, TikTok. I started a couple of things. Depending on the business, we started on different platforms. So built one of my businesses in the wellness space to 14 million people, started there on Instagram. Founder of West largely started with written content on platforms like X and LinkedIn. So yeah, on the metric side there, the metrics for X and LinkedIn are really the amount of people saving your content. The more people that save the content, the more valuable that content is, the more they're going to share it with their friends, and the more you're kind of triggering the algorithm to bump up that content to the home feed and drive more follower growth, drive more views. And so, you know, using this kind of organic strategy on LinkedIn, whereby we're making long form posts that have a really rich image along with them, seems to be the sort of content type on LinkedIn that's driving the most saves. And, you know, alone on LinkedIn, we've grown about 70,000 followers in just the last month using that strategy. And so, yeah, that's kind of how we look at it. The other side I was saying with things as well is that, you know, one part science, one part art. And I think what gets lost a lot of the time is taste. And if you're just looking at the metrics all day, you may make stuff that has good clickbait or, you know, is really clickable and just is following some kind of, you know, tasteless growth strategies. But it's important that you're actually making stuff that's quality that won't necessarily always show up in the metrics as well. But what are your thoughts?
So from a TikTok perspective, what we're looking at is if the algorithm is pushing you to the For You page, because oftentimes you'll post a video, and if you go into analytics for each video, you'll see that sometimes your video is just 30% For You and the remaining 70% personal. And so if you're not being pushed to the For You page, your chances of discovering a newer audience is close to zero. And TikTok, I guess, started this sort of trend when it comes to video content going viral, even if you have zero followers. So it really doesn't matter about how many followers you have or if you're getting millions of views on your first post. It's if people are discovering you with every post that you're posting. So yeah, that's a very important metric for us to kind of figure out if the strategy is working or not. And even though we don't necessarily have a strategy when it comes to creating content, we're kind of just trying to direct the client into being as authentic. As you said, it shouldn't be tasteless. It should be a little more authentic. It should have some sort of a real energy feel to it. So yeah, that's on the TikTok angle.
Thanks, guys. So from a YouTube perspective, Matt mentioned watch times, and watch time is really important. Subscriber growth, engagement rate is very important. But I would say that the most important metric that we have found has been thumbnail CTR, the thumbnail click-through rate. Because when people are clicking on your thumbnails and more people looking at your videos, it signals to them, to the algorithm, that you know you're interested, your audience is interested in it. And the video gets recommended to more and more people, so just what Fahad said. And that kind of snowballs on YouTube. In fact, thumbnail CTR is so important that YouTube has recently launched A-B testing for thumbnails for creators, and they're slowly rolling it out. So if for YouTube, I would say right now, that's the single most important metric to look at, thumbnail CTR.
Okay, so we have some really interesting different pockets of kind of interest experience here. And I'd love to talk a bit about when we're seeing things evolve so quickly, we're seeing algorithms change day to day. How are you guys adapting with that? Like, you have different strategies that are kind of in place, but are they evolving? Are you adapting? And if so, how?
So, I mean, on TikTok, there's 1 billion users, if I got the number right, every single day consuming your content. And it changes pretty much every second. But across 200 business profiles that we've created, we kind of get an understanding of the patterns of audience behavior. So like for the UAE, we know that if you say Dubai is the safest city in the world, it's going to potentially go viral. So it's more of adapting to the audience behavior and what they're responding to across different industries that we post. And sometimes also creating your own niche. For example, they spoke about the isn't that concerning thing. That's something that I've been working on for the last 1 year, just posting consistently parody podcast clips and ending it with isn't that concerning. And that was because people were saying isn't that concerning in the comments section. So I kind of just tapered my content towards that. And now it's just like a trademark of its own.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked a little bit about how you've kind of made things in a way go viral.
Yeah.
Is that what you'd say? Is the consistency and so, trying things?
So, yeah, I mean, if you're like, if you're getting more recommendations on the algorithm by the For You page, you're getting anywhere between 10 to 50,000 views with, and you have followers of like 500 to 1,000 at that point, you're definitely, I would, in my case, I would say you're going viral because you're bringing in masses of audience that you've never seen before on your page, right? And it only kind of, TikTok doesn't care if you're creative. TikTok cares if you're bringing people to your page, watching, keeping them on the video. And so sometimes we tend to repeat the exact same thing and we just tweak it a little bit. And it works. Like we've seen it go from 1 million to 28 million and it's the exact same video. Like I made a video once where I was like, why is the lens of a camera a circle and the picture is a square? I just changed the lens of an iPhone and it got almost the same amount of views, like around 6.8, and the first time it was 17 million.
It's amazing. And do we see the same kind of thing from YouTube on Qatar, or is it a totally different story?
YouTube is a slightly different story, I would say. And perhaps the reason is the content shelf life. TikTok, Fahad, correct me if I'm wrong here, a few minutes?
I wouldn't say more than an hour and a half.
More than an hour and a half. We've seen that Facebook is about 6 hours. LinkedIn is about 24 hours. Instagram about 48 hours. But for YouTube, can you guys guess what is the minimum content shelf life for a good, well-optimized video? Any guesses here? Just shout out a number.
Anyone want to raise their hand with a guess?
1 year. Minimum content shelf life. 1 year is a good metric to have, but minimum is 20 days. Yes, it depends. It has to be well optimized, but that's what we're talking about. So because the content shelf life is like that on YouTube, the story is slightly different. And the way content is created and consumed is slightly different. Yes, the algorithm is constantly evolving, but then algorithms are all, you know, under lock and key, and all we try to do is figure out the secret sauce. So what we do, and something that's proven helpful for our clients as well, is to do research into what the audience wants. And because of our platform, we have the capability to do that. So looking at not just keyword searches, but what are the people actually saying on YouTube? What is the consumer of content commenting on third-party videos? A brand knows what people are commenting on their videos, but what if there's somebody talking about cars, for example? It's a generic video about cars and somebody mentions your brand. That kind of social listening is very valuable to brands, but very difficult to achieve. And when you have access to that kind of data, you figure out what are people saying, and then on top of that, you're able to do a sentiment analysis and figure out if they're saying something positive, something negative. Brands can actually understand what are the conversations that they should be leading, what are the content gaps between their own owned content and where they're lagging behind. Now, when they start at this point and they go ahead and produce those videos, the engagement is automatically better. So engineered to win, that's where it comes from, the data bit. And also, because you're starting from a solid data-backed strategy, you don't really need to pivot as much. Like organic shows time, you know, takes time to show results. 3 to 6 months is the minimum for any organic effort to show a tangible result. So I don't like to pivot from a YouTube perspective, to just keep pivoting the strategy again and again. It's much better to start with research, solid data-backed research, have a strategy outlined, then at least let that play out and pivot if it's really tanking, which I'm sure it won't if you started with the good data.
Nice. And Matt, from your perspective, are you adapting? Are you evolving as algorithms and things change with your content? And
yeah, for sure. So I'll aim to keep this as like actionable as possible for everyone here and things maybe that I wish I had known when I was getting started. So number one is in terms of you know, metrics, I think it can get a little bit abstract, sometimes like overly complex to where some of you may be at today. And so I think it's just important to think about maybe just a cadence at which you're going to look at your metrics. You know, when I was getting going, it was like every Friday, spend like an hour maybe looking at per platform, what was the content that was in the top 25% of performing content over the last month? And then what was the content that was my bottom 25% of content? And just trying to look at some of the patterns, right? What's the stuff that did really, really well that I can double down on? And then what's the patterns of the stuff that's just garbage that I just need to stop doing that stuff? Remove that kind of patterns or those sort of formats from my content strategy. And inevitably, if you just kind of put in the reps and week after week, your content's improving by 5%, 10% week after week after week, that sort of, you know, discipline around the metrics will, you know, help you really kind of rocket ship things. I don't think you want to be like overly obsessed with it, or else, you know, you're just kind of, you know, wasting time and probably just avoiding making great stuff. The second aspect is, I think if you look at folks like Mr. Beast on YouTube as an example, kind of the God creator, you know, one of his biggest keys to success starting out was that on YouTube, he had a group chat on WhatsApp of five other friends on YouTube that they would trade different thumbnail ideas, title ideas, just trade some of the inside baseball that they were learning along the way on the platform, so that collectively they could keep it fun, they could enjoy jamming around business and around YouTube, and just share little inside secrets. And so I think, you know, if you guys are serious about growing on an individual platform, there's something to be said for just finding a few other friends or reaching out to some folks that may be doing well on the platforms that you're looking to scale on, and just kind of getting to know them, keeping, you know, in touch, sharing different content that's doing well, sharing things that are not working. And inevitably, you're just kind of getting a little bit of those nuances daily or weekly that just help you kind of gradually refine your content strategy. So yeah, those are a few things that come to mind.
That's a great idea. That's a great strategy and something, you know, everybody could realistically do. Okay, so slightly different topic here, but when you're talking about different platforms, and you are all using different platforms, how are you strategizing differently? You know, I mean, maybe you're a good place to start actually, Matt, because you're looking at content cross-platform. How are the metrics differing? How are you strategizing that, or are you?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll start off with just saying, yeah, I'm sure we all have different approaches to things. You know, I don't do brand deals. I don't work with anyone else. I build my own businesses and I use my organic content to drive people to those businesses that I own 100% of. And so that resonates, I think, with a lot of founders that are looking to scale up their businesses organically, not have to worry about complex ads, and scale a business that they control using a marketing method that they control. And so as you're going in, building out your audience, you obviously want to make sure that you're not just growing followers for followers' sake, right? That you're actually driving followers into dollars and not being one of these creators that have 5 million followers and $0 bank in your bank, right? So I think a key thing there is then like examining beyond just the metrics at which you're growing on the platforms. How many newsletter signups, as an example, are you driving from your audience so that you're not just growing a bunch of followers that, you know, at one point, Facebook could rug pull you, Twitter could shut down your account, TikTok could turn you off and you've lost everything. Instead, hopefully you control all that customer base in a newsletter or on an email list that you can still sell to them even if you get shut down, which again, probably won't happen, but you get the point. You want to kind of reduce your platform risk. So from there, you know, being able to then track, okay, well, what platforms via UTM links or just via that newsletter are actually driving me the most revenue? Because you may find that you have like 50K subscribers on YouTube, but it's actually pumping your revenue versus the 2 million followers you have on Instagram. And so you kind of want to follow the dollars, not just the growth on social, to know which platforms to triple down on. The last thing I'll say is in terms of like my content strategy, and I think everyone's a bit different here. I follow like a bit of like a content waterfall whereby my content on X is where I'm constantly experimenting, testing out different ideas, seeing what works. When stuff catches fire on that platform, one piece of content on X could become 14 other pieces of content downstream. Thereby, I'm kind of maximizing my effort on content and getting the most ROI from my time. So if an X thread blows up, as an example, that could become one LinkedIn post, three short form Instagram posts, three TikToks, one newsletter, one long form YouTube post, so on and so forth. And so I'm able to get the most bang from my buck and my creativity from that one post, and thereby drive, yeah, not just the views on X to then newsletter to monetization, but also all that additional sort of leadership across all platforms from the one idea?
Yeah, so when it comes to cross-platform, we're mainly focused on TikTok, but since TikTok came out with the whole vertical feed, Snapchat Spotlight came out, YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels, Facebook Reels as well. So for our clients, we kind of just recommend them to dump the content on all platforms. And we've seen sometimes a video will get 1,000 views on TikTok, but the same video's got 12 million views on YouTube Shorts. And there's really no answer as to why that's happening. I mean, there's different people scrolling on different platforms all the time. And when it comes to measuring success and what are we looking at in terms of metrics, how it's going to work out for them, it's just, for me, TikTok's the harder exam on short form content because people started off on TikTok with the vertical feed. So if your video does decent or even horrible on TikTok, it's most likely not going to perform on other platforms, but sometimes it does because people who are scrolling only on YouTube and now have YouTube Shorts, it's the example I use is of cockroaches. You know, over the years, cockroaches have kind of evolved to the sprays, and like you need more, they've become more resistant to the piff-paff that you use in them. So that's the same thing with audience. Like the TikTok audience is a very strong cockroach, and you can't kill it. But YouTube or Instagram or Snapchat is weaker comparatively, and you can definitely get more views more easily. And that's why you'll see on Instagram, it's comparatively on Reels. In the beginning, I'm not sure about today, it was easier to get views organically comparatively.
You know, as marketers, we want to be on all platforms, right? I'm sure a lot of you've been there, done that. As soon as a new platform is announced, let me go and get my own handle. Let me go and get my corporate handle. It happened with Threads. It was launched and suddenly everybody's downloading, everybody's on it. And now what? I don't hear Threads conversations at all. And the first week it was launched, someone at my company said, you know, new social media platform, let's put all of our corporate accounts there. And I said, no, let it play out. That's because how I approach platforms is that every platform that as a marketer you spend resources on comes out of your budget, whether it's time, whether it's money, time spent on metrics, like Matt said, and as marketers, as much as we would like, nobody has an unlimited budget. So it's very important for us to pick and choose the platforms. That's where the strategy is. In my opinion, we should look at the business objectives, you know, tying to what Matt says, you know, where the dollars, not just platforms, but where are you getting business from? So what are your business objectives? How do your marketing objectives align to that? And then which platform helps you fulfill those objectives? Starting from there, deciding which platforms you should be on and understanding that every platform serves a slightly different purpose. Like Fahad said,
yeah.
TikTok, the audience is there for entertainment. The audience has a very short attention span. And you're not probably going to get direct e-commerce sales out of that. So if that's what you want, you choose another platform. Matt was saying that, you know, maybe YouTube gives you the revenue, but Instagram, even though you have more followers, doesn't. So that's very important to look at your objectives. Understand that every platform has its own place. Pick and choose where your audience is sitting, where they're more likely to buy. In B2B, LinkedIn is that place. You know, nobody even says any other platform, because that's where the B2B buyers are. So I wouldn't go and put a B2B marketing salesy sort of a post on, let's say, Instagram or a TikTok, because that's not going to help me at all. And then when you have all these channels decided out, then have your social media platforms and your own channels, newsletters, your website, and drive traffic between the two to ensure that your business objectives and your revenue goals are met.
Perfect. Some really great insights there. And to finish then, let's talk about the future. What does the future hold for organic content and metrics? Where do you see it going? Send us off feeling inspired for what's going to happen next.
Cool. Yeah. So in terms of the future of it, one thing that we're pretty obsessed with at FounderOS and our content team is you know, that quality is the ultimate pattern interrupt. And I think that we live in a day and age where there's more content than ever. People are flooding your feed with clickbaity stuff. And one of the things that is best at just stopping people in their tracks is just an amazing quality, tasteful piece of content that you can just like genuinely resonate with. And so slowing down to speed up, I think, is something that's important. You know, in my own journey on YouTube, as an example, I was focused at first on just making a YouTube video every week, and I'm just going to keep pumping this stuff out because that's sort of what had worked for me on platforms like Twitter and LinkedIn. We decided then to slow down based on some advice we had gotten from some friends in a group chat. And we started just making one video a month, and we put 10x more quality into it. We put 10x more time into it. And we didn't just get 10x more results. We got 1,000 times more views, 1,000 times more subscribers. And so there's something to be said for just like slowing down a bit too, and making sure that you're building stuff that you're actually proud of, that you want to share with your friends. Metrics are good and all. That's all nice. But look at platforms like BuzzFeed, right? That was a company that all they cared about were metrics, and it's worth nothing, right? No one resonates with a brand that just chases virality. It eventually, it's just dead. No one here would wear the BuzzFeed brand on their clothing, right? Meanwhile, there's tons of brands out there that have a lot less views, but that are just unbelievable quality that you just really resonate with that creator. It feels authentic. You know, Emma Chamberlain and her coffee brand is a good example, right? Someone that just like makes great, authentic content. And if you can kind of, with the metrics, keep those as sort of like a bit of a guiding post, but don't lose track of just your own style, your own quality, your own authenticity, and leading into that side of things, because I don't think that anyone can replicate that. And I think that taste at the end of the day is the ultimate competitive advantage.
Yeah, I'm speaking mainly from a short form content perspective. I think the future is figuring out the best way to present yourself on video. I mean, we've seen it with like the co-founder of Brands for Less, Taufik Qureidi. I mean, this is a 50-year-old CEO doing TikTok dances and getting millions of views. Does it convert to sales? I'm not sure, but you got to stop selling. You got to start sharing content that people would want to share. I think the purpose of social media when Facebook came in was so that people can like, comment, poke each other. And brands kind of just flooded these platforms with ads left, right, and center. And nowadays, it's like, I don't want to watch an ad. You see an ad on YouTube, you want to skip it as fast as you can, right? Or if you've got YouTube Premium, you've got people putting ads in between the video and you want to just skip that. So if you can kind of figure out storytell about yourself, you know, how can I tell my story, whether it's through vlogs, whether it's through short form content, whether it's through X, I think you have a very good chance in the near future, because attention is the new currency. And if you have attention one way or the other, you are going to have an advantage over your peers, over competition, over different businesses. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Great. Thank you, Tal.
Are there any Potterheads around here? Any Harry Potter fans? Show of hands, please. Okay, some head nods and some hands there. So you guys know what Dumbledore said about predicting the future? You guys probably know that it's, you know, the world around us is so complex that predicting future is very, very difficult business indeed. And I completely resonate with that. The kind of scenario that we are in right now, so much technology evolving. AI was always a sideline conversation, but who knew it would explode the way it did last year? And things are constantly changing. So for us to say, how can we prepare for the future? What's going to happen?
So I would say that the one thing that we've got going is authenticity. The one thing that we've got going is sharing experiences and sharing expertise that has actually come from doing. Yes, AI content is absolutely flooding everyone's feeds, but people are smart. They can look at the same thing over and over and figure out that this is templatized AI content versus when somebody is sharing their authentic story, their actual experiences. And that, I think, is going to be a differentiator in the years to come.
Lovely. Well, thank you all for coming along today. And thank you to our wonderful speakers, Ankita, Fahad, Matt.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Follow us on social media at Step Conference and let's stay in touch.